from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio at Whistle Stop Active Aging Center in San Rafael, I'm Michael Krasny. Governor Gavin Newsom yesterday signed an executive order calling for a master plan for aging, as California is projected to have more seniors than children in a little more than a decade. It's something the governor highlighted in his February State of the State speech.
We need to get ready for this major demographic challenge headed our way.
A rising number of seniors want to grow old independently in their own homes, and that's challenging an already stretched in-home care system. In this hour, we talk about the benefits and challenges of aging in place and how technology, home modifications, and community organizations can provide support. All next. Welcome to this morning's forum. We are at the Whistle Stop Active Aging Center in San Rafael. I'm Michael Krasny, and many seniors want to stay in their own homes as they age, but mental and physical limitations often get in the way. In this special statewide broadcast, which is part of Graying California, a project of the California Dream Collaboration, we're going to talk about aging in place, and we'll look at when it is a viable option, how to make homes more accessible, and what resources are available to support seniors and their caregivers. Joining us, Carrie Graham. She's director of health policy at UC Berkeley School of Public Health with a joint appointment at UCSF. She's currently doing a congressional fellowship working in the House Ways and Means Committee. And welcome to the program, Carrie Graham.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have with us here Shireen McSpadden, executive director of the Department of Aging and Adult Services for the City and County of San Francisco. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good
Thank
morning
you
to you.
Me.
Glad to have you. And Anna Chodos is here with us as well. She's an assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Geriatrics at UCSF. Welcome, Anna Chodos.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you all for being here. And Shireen McSpadden, I'm going to begin with you. And let's just define what aging in place means. I mean, it refers simply to living in the home, but also in the community of choice.
Yes, so aging in place really is important part of aging, and people really need to live in the communities that they thrive in and with their community members and their family members.
And you think that this is really especially important as we change the demographics. We're going to have over 65 population projected to be about 8.5 million by 2030, and you also talk about this in terms of social justice. Why?
Well, I mean, people thrive in communities. They don't necessarily thrive in assisted living or in skilled nursing facilities. And so really, it's a social justice issue from that perspective. It's also really important because our system cannot handle a bunch of people going into assisted living. We have assisted living issues already. And when people need to go into assisted living, that's one thing. But we really can help people thrive at home as long as we have supports for them.
Well, the support is not always the family. It's about, what, 1 in 4 now, I believe, in
right.
terms of family care?
But there is a safety net. And in-home supportive services, for instance, or home care agencies can really help keep people at home. That's really the cornerstone of, you know, care at home. And there really is a good system out there, and we need to support that system.
I want to talk to you about that system, and I want to find out what, in the course of this hour, particularly services are available and so forth. But let's talk about when it's viable as an option and how to make it more accessible.
Well, there are a number of things that people can do to their homes to make them more accessible. People can have, for instance, a stair lift put in so that they can get up the stairs to their home. There are a number of things that people can do in bathrooms so that they can be stable, such as, you know,
lift a toilet seat,
benches, things like that.
And you're talking about the difference, really, I think, between San Francisco, which is your terrain, where there are often difficulties with the hills and stairs and elevators are needed and so
right.
forth, but also in rural areas, transportation becomes a major barrier.
It's a major barrier. And fortunately, states have programs. Our state has a program for transportation paid by the Older Americans Act. And, you know, so that really helps. I mean, it's not enough, and there's not enough transportation dollars, especially in rural areas, to provide the transportation that people need. But it's the basis for what's needed. And hopefully we can get more money into that particular line item in the Older Americans Act budget so that we can start doing a better job of providing transportation.
Although the Older Americans Act has been decreased in funding, hasn't it?
It has. It's a continued fight.
Continued battle, although we have the governor coming out with a program. We'll talk about that in the course of this hour as well. But that's Shireen McSpadden, Executive Director of Aging and Adult Services for the City and County of San Francisco Human Services Agency. Let me go to Anna Chodos, who's here with us. And I'd like to, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Geriatrics at UCSF, let's talk with you. You've been working with low-income aging populations, and many of them just simply are, let me put it this way, let's talk about healthcare, because it's easier sometimes for them to get Medicare than it is for middle-income people.
Yes, so most, I'm also a clinician, I do primary care and geriatrics in San Francisco General and the public health clinics in San Francisco, and so most of my patients are technically low income, so they qualify for Medi-Cal and can get a lot of the benefits associated with that, like in-home supportive services. But it is very true, the second someone doesn't qualify for in-home supportive services or make just a little bit more, which I think for those who don't know, it's a very low floor. So it's, you know, $13,000 a year for a single person, and less than $2,000 in savings qualifies you for the most part. And once you don't, once you have more than that in assets or make more than that in your retirement or pension, or you might still be working, then you do not qualify for some of these safety net programs. And that is a really tough spot for us as providers trying to connect people to services to be in it. We find it really hard to connect people to adequate services, because then when you're paying for a regular care, like a caregiver, I mean, that's the main expense, frankly, but it's, you know, understandably very expensive, $20 to $25 an hour, and most people can't afford that.
And there are other challenges in terms of care that I want to talk with you about. I mean, in terms of community services, doctors who are often working in this capacity, we're talking about healthcare again, don't often understand dementia, they don't understand frailty, they don't understand mobility problems.
Yes, so
it's a widespread problem, isn't it, overall?
Yes, so dementia is a humbling condition, and I think a major barrier for us trying to maintain our own independence in the community if we happen to have dementia, or for those of us trying to help people with dementia who may not have adequate support. So the overall prevalence is probably about 10% of people over 65, but as we get older, that goes way, way up, so about 30%, and in some populations, 50% of people over 85. So it's incredibly common. So it's something we should always be thinking about, assessing for, and helping people manage in the healthcare setting, particularly in primary care. But a lot of the symptoms early on are mild, and there's often a lot of other things going on. So somebody might have other health conditions that are being prioritized over a conversation and an assessment of their cognitive functioning. But the way I really encourage people, and we do a lot of education at UCSF Geriatrics, and half of my job is funded by educational programs, we really try to encourage people to pursue early symptoms. And the main questions to ask are, you know, if people are concerned about any changes in their thinking or memory, and any way that's affecting their daily life or functioning. So asking a lot of questions about function will help you understand how you can better fit their needs to services in the community in general, but also if there may be the starting processes of a dementia, which often impairs function. That's one of the definitions of dementia.
We're talking to Anna Chodos, who is Assistant Professor of Medicine and the Division of Geriatrics at UCSF. Let's talk with you, Dr. Chodos, a little bit more about, I know you served on an aging task force, and much of the problem that people also don't realize is they think getting to a certain age, you just go into a home. Availability is really a serious problem.
Yes, I really wish people understood this better. It takes a lot of planning and really understanding what resources and benefits you have. So not often, but not never, I've had patients come in and a new family member will be there who comes out of town and says, you know, we've heard from friends or, you know, family members who are local that they're not doing so well, and we're here now to put them in a facility. And the thing is, it does not happen like that. It takes a lot of planning, especially when somebody's at home. It takes a lot of coordination, a lot of advocacy to apply to places. Many places at this point really prioritize people who are coming out of a hospital where there's a lot more social work support and momentum to get that person in an adequate support environment. And it just doesn't happen like that. It takes months, if not longer. So I start asking people what they want, what sort of things would mean they'd be willing to go into a more supportive environment, and then planning with their resources and with other services in the community, like legal aid services for older adults, which are extremely helpful, or California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, which is canner.org, has a ton of resources and free legal aid and advice to help people start to plan, because unfortunately, in that crisis moment is probably the worst time and really challenging.
And there are health benefits of staying at home, we should mention as well.
Yeah, and I think if you pretty much you ask anybody, and that's their goal. So there's certainly the health benefit emotionally and just, you know, I think we can all appreciate as fellow human beings that being at home is a preferred option.
Well, there's a lot of talk about seniors advocating for themselves. There's even kind of a social movement along those lines. I want to talk with you, Carrie Graham, about that. Where is Claude Pepper now that we really need him, right? Those of you who remember, one of the major advocates for many years in Congress. But Carrie, let's find out about kind of it takes a village is what we're talking about here, isn't it? Really, literally?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the last few years, there's been a new, what we like to think of as really a social movement, a social movement around aging in place. And it's called the Village Movement. And villages are these organizations where older adults have gotten together in their communities and created organizations where they help each other. And they're really important organizations because one of their main focus is social engagement. So when we use the term aging in place, some of us who study this issue actually like the term aging in community better, because the goal is not necessarily just to stay in your own home. If you live in Berkeley and you have 40 steps up to your door and you can't get in your bathroom and you can't get in or out, aging in your own home is not necessarily the goal. And it's not a failure to actually move somewhere where it's easier for you to live. But these, the other thing about aging in place is a real challenge is social engagement. So being, you know, you can be living in your own home, but you can be really socially isolated. And some of the research that's come out recently suggests that social isolation is as bad for your health as smoking. So
it's not good for the immune system.
It's not good for the immune system or the lungs
reality,
or anything else.
The reality is these are many people who now don't have the networks they had before. They're not
right.
driving, and they
right.
have all those challenges as well.
Right. The networks are going away. The people, friends and family, are maybe getting ill and not being as socially engaged. People retire. They're not working anymore. Maybe kids don't live in the same state. So these village organizations, so what they do, they're really interesting. People join this club essentially, and they volunteer for each other. So if you can drive and you're in the village, you
hold
might drive.
Hold that thought.
People.
You can hear the music, and
oh, okay.
We're coming up on a break. We'll come back to you. And
yeah.
By the way, those of you listening, if you'd like to join us, we welcome your involvement. You can join us toll free at 866-733-6786. Welcome to the program on that number, 866-733-6786. And in the audience, if you'd like to join us, please do. Just raise your hand. We'll come to you. Thank you for joining us out there in listener land as well as here at the Whistle Stop. When we return, we'll talk some more. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We are live here at Whistle Stop in San Rafael talking about aging in place this hour. And we do welcome your involvement in the program. I remind you, you can join us either from our live audience here or by calling us at our toll-free number, which is 866-733-6786. If you have questions or comments, we welcome them. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. We're talking to Carrie Graham, Director of Health Policy for Health Research for Action. And Carrie, please finish your thoughts. Sorry about that break.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So I was talking about village organizations, and this is really a social movement, one of the first social movements that we've seen come out of the aging world in a very long time. And what they do is they create these clubs or organizations where older adults in a neighborhood decide to come together and help each other. So, for example, if you become a member of the village, it usually is a yearly fee. You can, if you don't drive, you can ask another village member to drive you. A lot of people like to join these organizations because they can volunteer for their neighbors. They could help someone take out their garbage. They could help walk someone's dog. So it's a way of neighbors coming together and helping each other. But a really core part of it is creating community. So a lot of what these villages do is they have parties. They have they go out to dinner together. So it's a way of rebuilding some of these social networks that might be degrading a little through the natural aging process.
How does this work for those who are particularly socially isolated, though? And I have to add the fact that most of the, that about one in five Californians who are over the age of 65 live in poverty. And we're talking particularly of high numbers in with women, much higher numbers with women, especially women of color, and certainly specifically for people of color, too, about two times as many Hispanics and African Americans, for example. You bring these communities together in terms of broadening their resources and their connections?
You know, village organizations have not typically been something that have been tapped into by lower-income seniors and lower-income communities, and partly because there actually are organizations out there called Area Agencies on Aging that are funded by the Older Americans Act that connect people to services that might be available, as Anna was saying, to people who qualify for Medi-Cal funded services. For example, for people who qualify for Medi-Cal funded services, there's a program in California. We're very lucky to have a program called In-Home Supportive Services, where you can actually pick your own caregivers and get services in your own home. But this problem of isolation, especially among lower-income people, is a real problem, and we're hoping the state plan on aging that Governor Newsom is promoting will do something about that.
It's a profound problem, and Cary Graham, again, is Director of Health Policy at UC Berkeley School of Public Health with a joint appointment at UCSF. Anna Chodas is also with us, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Geriatrics at UCSF. And Shireen McSpadden, Executive Director of the Department of Aging and Adult Services with the City and County of San Francisco. And please raise your hand in the audience if you have a question. We will come to you. And a question for those who are listening and for those in the audience, what factored into your decision to age in place if you do that or move into a senior community? Do you have any tips for seniors who want to stay in their homes? You can give us a call, and we welcome, again, your involvement in the program. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Before we go to callers, let me, if I may, go back to you, Shireen McSpadden. Let's talk about food, because it's a major, especially with nourishment and good food, a major issue for people who are especially living alone and socially isolated.
Yes, it is. And I think the national number is that about 16% of people nationally are considered food insecure. Seniors are considered food insecure. I know in San Francisco, we say one in three older adults is food insecure. So it's really an issue. There are some, again, some safety net programs that are administered by area agencies on aging that Cary referred to. And they provide some relief to that. So we have Home Delivered Meals Program, which is an Older Americans Act program administered by the state and then by counties. We also have a congregate meal program. And I think the Home Delivered Meal Program is really important. It not only does it...
It's like a Meals on Wheels, basically.
It's like Meals on Wheels. Yeah. The Meals on Wheels is probably the most well-known example. But it really helps people with food security, obviously, because they get some nutritious meals, but it also really helps people see someone every day. So you know they're seeing the driver, and the drivers are really committed to, you know, visiting the people they're delivering food to and connecting with them. And sometimes that's the only connection that people have during the day.
And let me ask you, if I could, Anna Chodas, about technology for those especially who are living alone. There are new ways now that one can enhance one's life through technology for monitoring, for example, health type of things and everything. Address that, if you would.
Absolutely. So I'd be really interested to know if anybody in the audience has tried to techify their lives or their home in some way that makes them feel more connected or safer. I would say from the healthcare perspective and primary care perspective, we haven't seen it revolutionize safety or health or connectedness, but there is some indication that it can be helpful. So one thing is to make sure people actually have access to internet and broadband. So that's a movement. The people who are less likely to have it in San Francisco are older and lower income. And then making sure actually they have some orientation towards digital life. So peer-to-peer training or someone who's willing to come in and work with them for a while to learn how to use an iPad or the internet to be more connected and maybe to look for health information. Pretty soon you won't be able to talk to your doctor or get prescriptions or anything without being able to use tech in some way. So it's an important piece. It's not just getting people a device or internet. It's also spending some time with them and showing them how to use stuff. And then, unfortunately, a lot of tech was never really designed with older people in mind or with older users as part of the development process. So I just have so many people, and in fact, it sometimes for me is a sign that there might be a developing cognitive issue, that really can't use a standard smartphone. And so there are simpler tech out there, which I would encourage people to look at if you're thinking about either helping somebody techify their life or you yourself want to use something. So iPads that only have one button. So there's something called the Grand Pad, which I'm not endorsing, I've just seen it, but is apparently much easier to use. Or sort of fall monitoring things that might have some motion sensors and can alert somebody, but are thoughtful about not monitoring every single thing that's going on in the house and big brothering the situation, which I think a lot of people wouldn't want.
And we've been talking about services, and there are a lot of services available. In fact, there's a recommendation of geriatric care managers who can come in and really techify, is that the word you used?
Unfortunately, I just made that up.
No, that's good. That's what we call a neologism, when you just make up a word that's viable somehow. Let me actually go to the audience here. We have Joe, and Joe has a comment for us or a question. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Joe O'Hare, CEO of Whistlestop. Thank you for featuring this important subject. I just wanted to follow up on Carrie Graham's comments. I do believe that the real movement is now aging in community. If you take where you are now, Marin is the oldest county in the Bay Area. People think a perceived affluent community, but our older adults struggle here. Many of them are elder orphans because their children can't afford to live here, and that's the typical community support. So programs like the Villages are important. There are other nonprofit communities. We have to deal with the safety issue of older adults in the houses that they're living in now. We need to create more affordable housing, transportation, nutrition. We have to take all the social determinants of health and package them for these older adults that are really struggling in these communities. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you for that, Joe. And let me go back to you, if I may, Carrie Graham. Here's a comment from a listener named Ann. I'd like your response to this. She says, my relative's non-skilled in-home care through an agency in the Santa Clara Valley costs $35 per hour. Her 24-hour sitter costs around $6,000 a week. Get real, people. If you think you can age in place without a very self-sacrificing family, you're dreaming.
Absolutely. And I think one of the most important things that people don't know, maybe people in this room know it, but Medicare does not cover any sort of home-based care. It might cover a little bit right after a surgery if you need therapy, but really we as Americans have no sort of benefit as seniors for anything like if you need a shower, if you help with a shower a few days a week, or if you need any kind of care in your home. So that's one thing. You know, we talk about technology and we talk about all these things, but if we make it to age 65, so if the people who make it to 65, 70% are going to need some kind of home care. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's all on us. So we have to plan. You have to save money to be able to pay for that. I'd also suggest that...
And excuse me, we need to also factor into that the burden on these home care people, the people who do the care at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a terrible onus for many of them, and it changes their
family
lives
caregivers.
Dramatically.
It's really... For most people, if you don't qualify for Medi-Cal and you don't have enough money to pay for these services, it's family caregivers. So there are states like Washington State just created a state-based long-term services and support benefit. And I'm really hoping that California will look into something like this that can provide for people at home, because that's really what we need to do to age in community.
We have a caller from Long Beach, and that's Anna. And Anna, welcome to the forum program. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
So my question is, my mom, she paid into long-term health care insurance for about 15 years because she knew she wanted to remain independent and she didn't want to be a burden to our family. And then, years later, my sister and I realized that she really wasn't going through her mail. So we started going through her mail and we realized that she had canceled her long-term insurance just a couple months before. So we asked her about it. She said, well, it was a lot of money and I couldn't remember what it was for. So I canceled it. So I called the company and explained to them the situation and that we'd be happy to make up the difference and pay what she had missed. And they said, well, at this point, it's been canceled, so now we'll have to come back out and reevaluate her. And, of course, she didn't qualify because she had dementia. And so now, you know, she paid for 15 years, $350 a month, and then that was gone. So my question is, what kind of legal recourse do we have for that?
I'm so sorry you had to go through all that. Anybody have any suggestions for her in terms of legal recourse? That's what she's asking for.
I honestly would call CANHR. If you go to CANHR.org and call their info line, and they can probably give you some advice and figure out how to get a lawyer.
Good suggestion, and I wish you the best of luck. Let me bring another caller aboard here. That's Gwen from San Francisco. Gwen, welcome.
Hi, Michael. I used to be a student of yours a long time ago at State. I'm one of these seniors. I was an activist, and I'm running around the world, you know, taking care of everybody else. But then I'm going, oops, who's going to take care of me in my senior year? So I want to comment on the woman that's about technology. I used to be a computer teacher for San Francisco Unified School District, but the technology keeps changing, and it's even difficult for me. So what I did was I went over to Unlock Senior Center, and that's another thing. It's great to be poor and a senior in San Francisco. Not great, but they have a lot of services. So this gentleman, he's in a motorized wheelchair. His limbs are very short, and he helps me with filling out something for TaxiScript. So that's another thing. TaxiScript, we have that here. If you're disabled, they will send a paratransit, that's what it is. They will send a van over to pick you up and take you to a doctor if you give them 24-hour notices, and it's only $2.50. And a lot of seniors, you know, they don't go out at night because they're afraid of being mugged. And you also, if you pay $18, you get $90 worth of TaxiScript. So I use, you know, it keeps me from being in at night. One last thing I would like to point out, we really should do something, especially San Francisco and Oakland, about housing. Like, you shouldn't be able to evict a senior that's, you know, disabled or just old, because they're going to eventually die, and you'll get to, you know, rent that unit out. So I wish there was more housing protection, because I want to stay in my home. I'm very active. I don't need anybody to take care of me. I live in a wonderful neighborhood called Noe Valley, and we all take care of each other.
Let me thank you for your call. We're running a little short of time here, I'm sorry to say, but I wanted to actually pick up from your call and go back, if I could, to you, Shireen. Let's talk about the services that are available now. I mean, there is an upcoming, as I've mentioned a couple times, statement by Governor Newsom about what map we're going to have ahead for us with aging. But a lot of people aren't aware of the services that are out there now. I mean, there are nutrition services, there are socialization services, things we've touched on, but also legal services, which you mentioned, and so forth. There's a lot that's available, and including caregiver support.
That's right. And so there are a lot of services available for people on Medicaid, Medi-Cal, we call it here. And there, so in-home supportive services, people can get CalFresh, and, you know, Medicaid in general, which is really helpful. For people who can't access Medicaid, there are a number of safety net services provided by the state. And, again, they're administered by counties. And there are things like legal services.
And these are free without means testing.
Yes, free without means testing. Legal services, community centers, which provide activities for people, all kinds of activities, things from choirs to drumming to pottery to lunch, outings, those kinds of things, which are really important when we think about social interaction, providing that social interaction for people. There are also robust transportation programs and things like home-delivered meals, like I mentioned earlier, and congregate meals.
So a lot that's out there.
There's a lot out there.
And people really ought to avail themselves and just to ask about what's out there. We have links on our website to listings of statewide agencies on aging, as well as the in-home support services throughout California. You can avail yourself of those just by going to kqed.org/forum. And let's move back to the audience. And Lisa, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. So I am a caregiver of a person with cognitive disabilities who is eligible for IHSS only a couple hours a day. The problem with that is that the pay rate is less than $15 an hour, and trying to find a worker who's willing to accept $15 an hour, 2 hours a day, is impossible. So my kind of comment and question is there anything in the works to either increase funding or increase the workforce so that we could actually have people who be willing to take the job and care for the people who actually are eligible for the services?
Carrie Graham?
I think that's absolutely right. The workforce issues are really difficult, especially in California, where people who do these kinds of jobs can't afford to live in San Francisco. You hear a lot on the news about, you know, trying to provide affordable housing for teachers or people who work in firefighting so that they're able to live in communities. And I think we need to start talking about our caregiver workforce and what kind of affordable housing we could provide so that caregivers could live near the people who they're serving. I think that would help quite a bit.
And let me remind those of you listening, this is a statewide broadcast that you can join us toll-free, and we invite you to do that at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, the number for your calls, 866-733-6786. And here's Rue, who writes, please discuss the shortage of assisted living and home care options for the elderly who depends solely on monthly Medicare versus Medi-Cal. Can I ask you about that, Carrie, again?
Well, you know, there's really no Medicare payment for something like assisted living or in-home care. We have no reimbursement for that or government assistance for that. So it's a really private pay, or if you've bought into the right long-term care insurance plan, which is a whole other topic. It's for people who have saved money and can pay out of pocket to move into these assisted living facilities. And then there's some bad actors out there in the assisted living world that raise the prices on you once you get in and things like that. So you have to be
very careful.
We
haven't even broached the whole topic of nursing homes and of the difficulties and challenges there.
Yeah.
We are coming up on a quick break, but we remind you that if you're in the audience, you can raise your hand if you have a question, and we'll come to you. If you have a comment, we do want to hear from you. And again, the question we're asking those of you in the listening audience, if you are doing in-place living, what factored into your decision to age in place, and what tips do you have, if you have any, for seniors who want to stay in their homes? Again, you can give us a call now at 866-733-6786. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we are live in a remote broadcast, Forum on the Road, Whistle Stop Aging in Place is the topic this hour. Talking with Carrie Graham, Director of Health Policy at UC Berkeley School of Public Health, with a joint appointment at UCSF, and Shireen McSpadden, who is Executive Director of the Department of Aging and Adult Services for the City and County of San Francisco, and Anna Chodos, who is Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Geriatrics at UCSF. And remind listeners that they can join us toll-free, and we welcome their call. We welcome your calls if you're listening to us from wherever you're listening to us throughout the state of California. The number to call is 866-733-6786, or join us here in the audience, speaking to the live audience, simply by raising your hand, and we will indeed try to come to you. Let's take another caller, and that's Deborah, who's joining us from Richmond this morning. Deborah, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I work for North Bay Healthcare in Solano County as a hospice nurse. I've been doing it for 10 years, and I'm a huge advocate of aging in place. And I think a big part of that is hospice care, end-of-life care. And there's a lot of misconceptions about hospice. You have to be on your deathbed. But in reality, if you qualify, you know, you have to have 6 months or less approximately. But if you qualify, you can stay up to a year on hospice. And I think it's just such a, such a great program. It's 100% covered by Medicare Part A. And I really encourage people to talk to their loved ones, talk to their families about what kind of goals they want for end-of-life care, because I think hospice can be a great option for people to stay in their home. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for that call. And Anna Chodos, it is really a good option, and she's absolutely right. We should demystify hospice as being the end of all things and going over the precipice as soon as you go into hospice. It's not always that way at all.
Yeah, there's definitely evidence that we refer way too late, but I certainly try to refer early because I really see it as a benefit both to the person getting the hospice services and the caregiver. So it really brings an additional resource and form of support to that caregiver. And just more broadly, I think in healthcare, we really need to be thinking about the caregivers as part of the healthcare equation, assessing the caregivers and figuring out ways to help them. And so often that's when I start thinking about hospice, when I'm realizing the caregiver really has a lot on their shoulders, may need some additional support. And, oh, by the way, this person, based on their dementia state or, you know, level of advancement, dementia, might qualify for hospice, so let's try, let's refer. And sometimes agencies will take them and some of them won't. I really appreciate the caller's comments, but sometimes I found if I refer, you know, quote unquote, too early, I just get told they're not eligible yet. So it sort of depends.
I have a caller, Steve, joining us from Los Angeles. Steve, welcome. You're on the program. Good morning.
Hey there. I was hoping that someone, that the panel could talk about what the impact of aging in place is having on the housing crisis in California. You know, people are living longer, they're staying in their homes longer, you know, they're paying taxes on their home values from, you know, the 60s and 70s. Is it having a negative impact on the housing stock and the availability for, you know, younger families that are looking for homes for their families?
Yeah, I'm afraid more people are being displaced. That's a fact, isn't it, Shireen?
Yeah, more people are being displaced. And I think it's hard when we start pitting populations against each other. I think we have an aging population. I know in San Francisco, our population is over 20%, and I hear that argument a lot. We just have a housing crisis overall, and I don't think we need to talk about it in terms of age necessarily. We need to think about advocating for more housing and more housing, you know, more housing dollars, essentially.
You want to talk about this, Anna Chodos?
A little bit, just because I would say it does come into my daily work in the sense that I'm always asking people about if they're worried they're going to lose housing, because I want to get them advocacy as soon as possible. Because once they're out of their home, whether they've been evicted, many people will get eviction notices and not realize what it is. And it will sort of, we've had people show up at our doorstep now having lost their place of residence and not realizing that they were getting eviction notices. And part of that sometimes is literacy around those issues, and sometimes it's actually cognitive impairment that we hadn't detected beforehand. So there aren't always a ton of protections way upstream in place. And so it's something that I've folded into my actual sort of visits to ask people about their housing and making sure that they feel secure and that they're not nothing sort of looming.
Carrie Graham, let's have you weigh in.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out in terms of a solution that some people are starting to think more about shared housing. So, you know, this idea that there are people who maybe seem wealthy, but they're really house poor. They have these large houses, and they can't afford to maintain them. So bringing other people in to live with you. There are some senior service agencies that are helping people negotiate that and bring seniors together, maybe someone who can't afford the rent and someone who has a big house, bringing them together and helping negotiate that contract and sharing housing that way.
But even if people are in rent control apartments, for example, mm-hmm. the costs are going up, and not only are the costs going up, I'm just talking about basic inflation, but the benefits are going down at the same time that the costs are going up. So we're in kind of a limbo situation here and an inexorable situation in so many ways, alas. Ron writes, please discuss the shortage of assisted living and home care options for the elderly who depend solely on monthly Medicare versus Medi-Cal. We already covered that. Here's another listener who writes, how can elderly people get help with property taxes, insurance payments, and their mail? Also, how do you protect against phone and internet scammers while living at home? Some thoughts from you on that, if I may? Shireen McSpadden?
Yeah, so there are some programs, case management for one, which is another program that I didn't mention earlier, which can really help people with their mail and thinking about, you know, making sure they're making their payments and all of those things. And in terms of the scams, there are a lot of scams out there, and Adult Protective Services in each county really helps, you know, let people know about those scams. We work very closely with senior centers to let people know about scams, but there are a lot of them out there, and the more education our industry can do, the better.
We've done programs on robocalls and scams, and the federal government is finally taking some action, which is long overdue, if I may say so. Let me go to the audience, and let's welcome Lisa from the audience. Lisa, join us.
Hi, my name is Lisa Brinkman. I'm with Marin Villages. We started this, thank you for coming too. We started this at the very beginning about the gap for the middle class and how there's a lot of services that are not available. We also mentioned how aging in community is actually a very healthy and probably less expensive way of aging in general. Do you see any movement to kind of partner and help community-based organizations to actually have a little more traction and be able to reach those middle-class seniors who may be house-rich, cash-poor, or they may just be isolated because they've lost their driver's license? Many of the community-based organizations struggle for funding and so forth, where some of the services that could be delivered might be delivered more efficiently by neighbors helping neighbors.
Well, thank you for that question. And Carrie Graham, it's tailor-made for you.
Yeah. So one of the things that's happening at the federal level is that Medicare Advantage plans, so, you know, these plans that you buy to get your Medicare through an HMO, now have the authority to provide services that are maybe not medical related, like transportation or home support services. And one way they can do that is by contracting with these community-based organizations that have been serving communities oftentimes for decades. So places like the SCAN Foundation are doing trainings, business acumen trainings for community-based organizations so that they could better contract with things like managed care plans to provide these kinds of services. So if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, ask your plan about what might be available to you.
Remind you that this is KQED Radio, the forum program. I'm Michael Krasny, and let me welcome another caller aboard here. Rita joins us. Rita, hi.
Oh, good morning. I'm a local, I live in San Leandro, and I do share my home, a home I've lived in for 70 years, same place. And I informally invited a friend, and this has worked beautifully. Now, this is informal. And I now joined an organization at my local synagogue, and we are trying to make life more joyful for seniors. And I would like to suggest that I will take charge in a way for specific issues such as shared housing. And I understand there is a state, I don't know if it's Washington or if it's Oregon, where they actually have a program that encourages people like me who've owned a house a long time, big house. I'm happy to have someone in the house with me. I'm not alone. I could even have one more senior here. How do we get in touch with each other? What are the phone numbers to call? And I would like to provide that information, as I say, locals for my local church or spiritual community, something like that. So I would like specifics in a way.
Rita, that's very kind of you. And can we go find some specifics from you, Shireen McSpan?
I missed the last part of the question. I'm
it's
sorry.
Looking
I couldn't hear it.
Really to make how to make connections in terms of sharing housing and that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I think one way is to go to the local area agency on aging, and I know not every county has one. But there are 33 across the state of California, and that is a really good place to make those types of connections.
And I, as a gentleman reared by my mother, I didn't ask Rita her age, but she told us she's 90. That's why I live in a house for 77 years. Nancy writes, we talk about aging in place as an ideal, but it isn't always. My parents were glad they moved to assisted care in their hometown of 50-plus years. Their friends had died or moved away, and their church was full of young families. They could no longer cook for themselves, had no social life, and were increasingly in danger of falling or other accidents. And that certainly has to be factored in here, Carrie Graham.
Well, I'm going to answer for Carrie.
Okay.
So this is Anna.
This is Anna Chodos.
But, yeah, I think, so when we really think about, obviously a lot of people will tell us that they really value staying in their home. They would really prefer to do that, even when things seem like they're not going very well. And what I try to talk about is what's the right fit for you? We're seeing these things. These might be some of the things you need help with. This may be some of the ways your current living environment is not meeting those needs. So trying to take a little tension away from, I think you should be living here, and you know, but while you think you should be staying in your home, if there's some sort of family tension there, and really focusing on what would work better and what some of the hazards are. And then, as Shireen mentioned earlier, we really do try to assess the home environment and make sure we can modify it as much as possible. And there are things like delivered meals or visiting volunteer services for social visits that work for some people, not everybody. But I think when safety is a concern, it really requires everybody around that family to start talking about it and thinking of other solutions.
Once again, it's important to point out there are not enough assisted care spots for the growing demographic. That's just a fact.
Yeah, and so we're often in the situation where we're in, people are living in untenable situations, potentially unsafe situations, because we don't have another option, and that is just the reality of the current situation.
Let me go to another Los Angeles caller. Connie joins us. Connie, you're on forum. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning. I'm looking for a nearby village community near me. I'm in the Los Angeles area near the airport, and this is the exact thing I've been looking for because I don't qualify for the Medi-Cal arm. I'm looking for something that others that are in the same predicament I'm in. I'm in my own home. I'm able to take care of myself. I'm legally blind. So I would just need something that a community, you know, if I could find a village, or how would I contact someone that could direct me to a village that I might join?
Yeah, thank you for that question. And Carrie Graham, I think you can at least direct her. Or
sure,
help her.
Absolutely. I know there's a village or two in your neighborhood. So if you can go on the internet, the Village to Village Network website, it's vtv.org, you can search by your zip code and find a village in your neighborhood. But I would also say contact your area agency on aging and see if lots of communities through their AAA have local volunteer programs where someone could come out and volunteer or that sort of thing. So both call your AAA and look for a village in your neighborhood.
And once again, Carrie Graham is Director of Health Policy for Health Research for Action with UC Berkeley School of Public Health. We'll go back to our audience and welcome Ken. Ken? Good morning.
Hi. Thanks. I wondered if your guests could talk a little more about aging in place for renters. I've never been able to own a home, especially in the Bay Area. And there's this feeling as a renter of slowly losing power as they get older and older over things like repairs and that kind of thing. Eventually, I suppose, fear of eviction. I don't know what a renter's rights are in terms of eviction for what kind of cause as one ages.
Thank you for that, Ken. Dr. Chodos was nodding her head.
Oh, I just couldn't agree more. I would say a lot of folks that I care for are renters. And so what I do is just ask, make sure that they're not concerned they're going to lose housing if indeed they're aware, and then refer them to legal advocacy organizations to make sure that their rights are protected and that they're aware of what they would do were eviction proceedings to start to occur. But there are a lot of protections for renters, and it just takes knowing about them and having some advocacy on your side. And I will say this is just a general plug for advanced care planning in general, I think actually is protection for aging and community, because allows you to really know where your finances are, what your benefits are, what your options are going to be, and who would help you were there to be an emergency, like you couldn't take care of your own affairs, or somebody like a scammer was trying to get access to your finances.
I wonder, Shireen McSpen, did you want to add anything?
Well, I would say renters' laws are different in every county, but I would agree that legal services are a really good way to go, and the Older Americans Act programs include legal services. And I know in San Francisco, we spend a lot of time with those very issues. So when people are at risk of eviction or they're not getting the repairs that they need, our legal programs can really help with that. So I think you could check in and see what it is in your county, if Marin is your county.
And I want to bring in another caller, and that's Dana, who's joining us from Southern California, from West Covina, to be specific. Dana, welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Yes. Go ahead, please.
Yes. My question was, I'm 62 now, and I checked with Social Security about having in-home nursing, and they said that I would be eligible, but I'm afraid that because of my pension, and I'm also a homeowner, I might not be eligible. What are the rules for Social Security and home nursing care?
Who can help us here in terms of Social Security, Carrie?
Well, you're looking for in-home nursing, so that would be California's in-home supportive services. And to qualify for that, you have to be eligible for Medi-Cal, which, as Dr. Chodos said, is about an income of about 13 $1,000 a year. So that's a pretty low income. So your pension would need to be below that. If it is below that, then you, through this program, they assess how many hours you need and are able to, you're able to pay your own caregiver and choose your own caregiver. But it's really only available to people with these lowest incomes. And I do, but in terms of the home ownership, and Anna, you might know, the I do think that you have, there's an exemption for owning a home that's not going to be held against you. Is that right, Shireen?
That's correct.
Shireen?
That is correct. There is an exemption
okay.
for owning your own home, so that wouldn't preclude you from getting the service.
Okay, we've got that straight, and we're actually coming up to the end of this hour. I want to extend thanks to all of you for all the information you've provided. Any really particular service website other than the ones that have been mentioned here that anyone wants to bring to the fore?
I would say Family Caregiver Alliance, which is based in San Francisco, is one of the first caregiving advocacies organizations. So something that older adults who are aging in place are also often dealing with is that they're also caregivers. So Family Caregiver Alliance is a wonderful resource for people who are providing care.
And again, that's Carrie Graham, Director of Health Policy at UC Berkeley School of Public Health, with a joint appointment at UCSF. And this is a reminder that we've been talking here in a special statewide broadcast, which is part of Grain California, a project of the California Dream Collaboration, talking not only with Cary Graham, but Shireen McSpadden, Executive Director of the Department of Aging and Adult Services for the City and County of San Francisco, and Anna Chodos, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Geriatrics at UCSF. Thank you all, and thank you our live audience here in San Rafael. And I'm Michael Krasny.